we're going to take it out with Geneva Skeen, Mere Glimpse. This is from her release, Double Bind, on Room 40. Thank you for listening to A Different Nature, and keep it tuned here to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO is hiring a membership director. Our membership director maintains relationships with KBOO members and listeners, create a process to meet or exceed fundraising goals, and manage the membership database. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Apply by March 15th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
Welcome to The Talking Earth. I'm your host, Dan Raphael. This is my third show, and things continue developing. Don't think I'll be accessing the KBOO studios for a while, but I am learning more about recording. And the weather will be getting warmer as we go along. Of our three poets tonight, I recorded Rebecca Smolin on my porch, Leanne Grable on her porch, and C. Putnam recorded himself in his orbiting studio. I'll also be reading a couple poems by Tongo Eisen-Martin's book, Heaven is All Goodbyes. Last month, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, famous poet, publisher, bookstore owner, civic activist in San Francisco, died about a month short of his 102nd birthday. His book, Coney Island of the Mind, still one of the best-selling poetry books in the country, first poetry book I ever bought, and a lot of tributes already been done to him, but here's just a short poem of his I've always loved. See, it was like this when we waltzed into this place. These couple of papish cats is doing an Aztec two-step, and I says, man, let's cut. But then this dame comes up behind me, see, and says, you and me could really exist. Wow, I says. But the next morning, she has bad teeth and really hates poetry. That's Ferlinghetti. And now up is Rebecca Smolin. She's a writer based in Portland, transplanted from New Hampshire in 2014, and says she's the mom of two adorable little gingers. She grew up on a dead-end road exploring drainage pipe and pond life and has a degree in creative writing and philosophy. Rebecca has been trained and is certified to lead writing classes in the Gateless Method. This method was scientifically created to avoid provoking the fight-or-flight reaction, generating a safe place to produce raw, new writing that will spotlight the strongest talents of that material. You can find her poetry most recently in Allegory Ridge, Feminine Connective, Tiny Seed, The Inflectionist Review, Poeming Pigeon, and her collections Womanhood and Other Scars and Excoriation, published by The Poetry Box. And now, here's Rebecca Smolin.
My first poem that I'll be reading is Nesting Doll in Spring. Daffodils bloom loud, yellow. The petals are new, firm. The eyes of my daughter catch it. Her thinking of me is not instant, but the plan to pick it is already in action. Her hands, barely with years on them, nails saving the dirt of her multiplying days, open like sunshine and grasp high around the stem. She tugs with the strength of the women who have come before her that she has been within. the egg of her inside my new formed ovaries as I floated in fluid of my mother's uterus, my daughter being the smallest nesting doll. Only takes a second to pop the ripe daffodil head off thick greened stem, stumbles back a step before she appraises her golden treasure for any ruining. This is when she thinks of me. She grabs the newest proof of spring that she has been requesting for more than a week now, pinching where yellow celebration should meet verdant stock, and gifts it to me proud, confident of the closing winter. This poem is titled, I'm Trying Not to Blame. The silence between heartbeats, the split second of not knowing if the next will pound, the shadows that illuminate what is lit, how memory can walk through any wall, how defeated the ephemeral words of another can make you feel like a ghost of importance. Remember, the nature of a puddle is to dry up, and the oceans is permanence. The purpose of rain is to fall, but not like love or a scraped knee. The scent when peeling an orange clings to fingertips and under nails, similar to how darkness crawls inside you too. The scent of it resides long enough for you to forget how you ripped it open first. This poem is titled Incipient. In the lowest moments, I feel dreamt by someone else, and their world is ending. Doors and windows only open to more doors and windows, and even the burning is not on fire, not burning when I look back in concern. I get lost from one room to another in my own childhood house, but find a secret room to hide under the stairs that was once headspace to the basement. That basement might still hold onto so many little mouse souls that didn't get the hint with our humane traps first. When I am dreamt by someone else, I am most powerful, but am in constant struggle to prove it. I sometimes question if this too is dream. When I question, I am reassured of the dream and the way out. Reality has never offered me that. In dreams, I gorge on sweets that are not sweets, but I still get that sick, full feeling. In dreams, I stand in line for a snow cone, and when I finally make it up to order, everything has melted. I could feel the ice granules on my tongue, though. And I could taste it. In dreams, I run from someone that isn't really after me, and I feel in trouble. Yet if it's a monster, it's always human-like and wants to turn me into something like itself. In dreams of fire, I feel the flames. They act like fire but need to tell me something different. And I try to save everyone from burning or the threat of learning the truth before I do. I keep going back, knowing there is someone else to save, knowing I might not have the strength alone to save them, and search through smoke, holding my breath, but only come to accept I cannot hold it forever, then breathe as I need, and wonder why I'm not coughing, why I can't find anyone else here to save. Another dream poem. This one is titled Fulgurations. 1. Nothing left but a stone foundation just inside a line of trees at the top of our street. Stories of fire. Our street, a trident of cul-de-sacs. After a heavy snowfall, I fell in as a kid playing too close. Childhood can be alluring and slippery. Dreams are flammable. 2. I wait for a text, an excuse to leave this house. I need an out, a friend or something of the like, for a drink that I need these days more than ever, more than I should. I know what happens to people in my gene pool when dreams of alcohol spark bigger than our future and catch on fire. 3. In dreams last night, winter, dark sky, snow on the ground, I sought refuge at a house. Every room was amid remodel, holes cut in the wall, doors unable to close, floors half sanded, moving boxes full. The women sat me down to give me tips on finding cheap housing near train stations. In the northeast part, one had to leave to catch a plane. The kitchen stayed dark, the dirty linoleum cold. This one is titled Promise to Remind Me. If I happen to lose track of you someday, and if we happen to cross paths again in old age when our memories have grayed, our elbows no longer bend to embrace each other, and our knees cannot carry us past the flowers I had made you pause for, may you remind me of the forgotten poetry you had been. Ignite the flames I could once wander through, and this life I would spend for mere promise of one more night, forehead against forehead with you. Okay. Pockmarked and precious. My moon on a cycle around all of us. It is no coincidence that women are pulled into an orbit too. Something beyond our understanding of gravity, of power and routine, in the building up and in the shedding. Do you know that man has named every crater on the moon? Perhaps something like the stories that go with each of my scars, ones we can see. I have one above another, each 6 inches long between hip bones for each babe, stopping short of a butterfly tattoo with a rose in each wing. Scars up my legs, too many bug bites scratched raw as a kid, speckled around my falls and picked scabs. Fascinating how proud of each I am now, no longer bitter at the imperfections. From afar, no one can see those stories. Times I have invisible pain, and I think how clear it would be to have a scar to go with that feeling. The smell of a humid summer brings back emotional pain, sweaty frustration, anger with sadness and fear. Not many can understand when I say a scar would be easier. But the scent arises with nightfall and sight of my full harvest moon. That scent comes with relief of the heat, chorus of peepers, and confidence of seeing constellations when I look up from the edge of a paved driveway, from a sharp edge of freedom, an edge of the rest of my life. That scent still haunts me on nights like these, when comets over mountain view coax me out to an edge beyond my control, as if wound threatens scar to remember the story. Secret admirer. Dear virus, you are gorgeous. I've been admiring your persistency, resiliency, your music, your reluctancy, tenacity, destruction, your chaos, your ability to take us out with one cough, that I have no doubt. If I have caught you, as if foot in bear trap, snared in net, hook, line, sinker, opponent, predator, prey, who is who, dear virus? My mother stares into you daily. My father greets her at the door each morning, so I want to thank you for choosing me. Thank you for not being so obvious, heartless, devious. I've grown quite fond, dear virus. You are this sapiosexual's fantasy, this poet's pen and paper, meter after meter. I do not need to speak to linger here as carrier. Remember, you would not be carrying me. Dear virus, I see you. If you need love, I can love you. I have loved worse. Creeper, suitor, lover, abuser, I've memorized how this goes. Yell, swing, duck, cower in the corner, nurse unseen bruises. I tell myself I'm nothing. I deserve it. I deserve it. Then recover like I do, like I've done. Dear virus, my dear, dear virus, I will welcome you in to every shadow, organ, cell. Please know that I know now I am gorgeous too. So, at least this time, it will be a fair fight. This poem is titled Time Lapse. I swear I have tumbled down 1,000 years, each one felt in my bones, joints, thoughts, each heartbeat, not just mine, but fed from other lifetimes. I feel it. Muscle, sinew, laugh line, recycled onto me, they keep their own reasons, having saved their own memories. Kindreds are others that belong to the same occurrence, cause or effect. 1,000 years, maybe more, that I can feel in my iris, palm, fingertips. When I stretch my arm's limit only to point at constellations I know I will never reach. But it's there. It's then. When I stand among the many with the same purpose that I feel the least seen and the most whole.
Thanks, Rebecca. Now, before the next Portland poet, I'm going to read something by a San Francisco poet, actually the recently named Poet Laureate of San Francisco, Tongo Eisen Martin. I heard him read about 2-3 years ago and was floored, and he performs it all from memory, which is amazing, an amazing performer. Kind of a nice coincidence is that the first San Francisco Poet Laureate was Lawrence Ferlinghetti, and it is Lawrence Ferlinghetti's press, City Lights, that published Tongo Eisen Martin's book, Heaven Is All Goodbye. Things connect, you know. Selling what slaves made. Nothing worked in the ring, man. I took my angel on one, I mean really divided him from God. They write books backwards about fights like mine. A lone wolf in three pieces. Everything we know of duty we made up. Maker, my maker. Born in a garbage pile outside of a silver mine. Garbage pile or pile of alley rugs. I think I dealt with your death well, Lord. Garbage pile or shelf full of inner city poems. Silver mine or interstate rhymes. Looking up at the floor tile, I learned how to dodge rain on purpose. Looking up at the floor tile, I cursed at my second-hand shoes. I cursed up at my second-hand heaven. Although, thankfully, I had no brothers behind the milk crates. Had no father where your cracks make an interesting contortion of border and speed up war stories. Police daydream at me. While someone's laying puddle-side, half curled up, half related to no one. Don't put this on your temple wall. Don't put a temple in the middle of this side room. Don't twitch yourself to death. Don't take yourself so serious that your soul falls off. I'm down on my luck, making snow angels on the abandoned factory loading dock, looking up at the tonsils of non-African deity. We are going to stay right here until the third world comes. A beautiful rejection, though. We call Europe distant criminality and toast to it. A 10-pound weight on your shoulders can kill you if applied the American way. Straightforward philosophy finds me well-meaning. A flood only means one thing on the West Coast. Made to struggle on top of people, the reformist class contradiction continues in thin air, one of the many phantom skylines collapsing. Too bad our gasoline means nothing to their world, because we would certainly lend it. Wise man, if you didn't win the war, we could call you a nobody and look for advice in other Louisiana houses. Well, that's a funny way of declaring me a saint. I can be two things to all people, old or a hammer. The world is a pile of clothes. The world is this pile of worlds. Maybe I'll hang on my style a little longer. The jailer moonwalks to the switch. May your skin end up on a tambourine in the deep south. Tendered my death thread on a lounge napkin with three stains, talking about biological parenting and the presents I brought to powder, laughing a little, then laughing hard. My empty hand takes a bow, final impersonation, front row with the sirens. A field of gun handles is better than most fantasies. And sequence counts only for survivors. That's Tongo Eyes and Martin from Heaven Is All Goodbyes. Next up, locally, have C. Putnam. C. Putnam is the author of the papier-mâché Taj Mahal, XX Elegies, Spaces Where Spaces Are, Transmissions from the Institute, Maniac Box, Things Keep Happening, Crawl Space with Daniel Comiskey, and the chapbook The Bunny Manuscript, Episode 3. His sound works include PISOR Scares, a series of mind-melting Halloween-themed sound collages, and an ambient drone work, Music for Plants and Other Living Things. And now bringing you C. Putnam.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PISOR Home Studios. I'm C. Putnam. And tonight I'll be reading for you some poems from my most recent manuscript called The Bird May Be Dead, But It Is Your Bird. Enjoy. Starfish and the sea urchin listen to the sea cucumber song. The light, the shine inside, it says. The shine inside the light, it says. The fire inside the fire, it says. The smoke, the air, it rings, it says. The dark tastes its flesh, it says. Drawing in the dead light, it says. And to a throbbing maw, it says. The floor is sand and bones, it says. And when the shine is gone, it says. It's then the shadows go, it says. It's then the shadows go, it says. To Wordsworth. Silent in the corn, a heart enchanted by silk husk, tearing the heart that refused to beat. Death-pitched marble, a hulk with nothing underneath. I cannot cough my thoughts. Distant saxophones blast varied responses, stretched out my hairy stems, a music imposed at the birth of stars that germ the bedtime mask. Twinkling dew on freshly scattered hay? Really? Pollute, quiver, and endure. Sea monkeys. Searching, however useless, no water, no food, an abandoned shack on a little gray hill. The bunny says the sun sets 13 times faster over the entire state of Florida, now permanently on view underneath the ocean. Nobody has a golden trident. Nobody has a golden crown. The people, the animals, the plants, even the pastel chalk dust, everything, whatever, moving in all directions, like fireflies used to do. The sun doesn't like to see what we have done. The fantastic skimmer is likely to be encountered. Maybe it's because ducks don't talk much when they are flying. Few have hearts so dark and broken, they will not bother to look up when they hear the barking of wild geese, and think for a moment that they are upside-down birds, looking down on themselves, barking. What they said the way of the leopard was, my party drugs need much larger platters. After refusing my request for such several times, the leopard lover, the former lover of the leopard's lover's leopard lover, consented to my platter desires were mine, We're lovers. We're leopards. We're in love forever and ever. Like leopards can. Like leopards do. What's it like? I am looking at a light gray spot on a darker gray ocean. When the sun has been behind the clouds for 87 days, and I feel that all the light left in the world is trying to light up just that little dot, that's what it's like. Unhappily, a small room. Unhappily, a small room, that is your living room, and the living room for a very large family of beavers, covering every edge a pile of leaves. Each beaver rakes to make a bed of its own, gnaws the bark, suckles and rears to make of the center a dining room, a new world between chin and forepaws, refusing to adjust to the conditions of the age. It's always amusing to see you eat bread. But why would the chicken wings swing back like that, pulling the children back into the plains where they had previously existed? So tell me, when you press that blue button on your belt, your waist is pulled in a direction at a perfect right angle to all the directions you could possibly go in outer space? I don't believe you. The button doesn't even light up. Welcome to your orientation. When I tell the tick to stop drinking blood, and when it won't stop, I will have to lick it. One must die before the other. I was expected to complete all my work over the weekend. The manic smile fell off the door with a thud. Dull digging. But what the hell is all this digging for? I thought spiders building webs inside the goat's eye. And that goat was my only way home. The sublime totality. Non-toxic skull flower. How do you know my name? Bone precisely sealing wax. Harmonizing watchful hygiene in action. Glass stoppers. An erogenous center spinning between 21 and slaughter. The exhibitionist is relaxed before the magistrate. You will let this understanding enter you. I am me without me. I tell myself, I am the sock of all creatures. No foot, paw, or hoof can exist without me. I picked up the pine cone. A money devil tried to seduce me by strewing gold coins about. It was the sound that first caught my attention. I thought it was a plumbing problem at first. The money devil smuggles hedgehogs to the outer reaches to make its profit. Once there, the hedgehogs fill their lairs with grapes and pears and curl up into spiny balls, possibly instinctually, out of fear. Only a servant of a devil would scratch its ass with those balls for pleasure. I sat upon the floor, itching. The other day, a magpie delivered a mirror to my doorstep. It carried an image of the deed. When I'd heard you died, I felt so far away. The magpie cries out with a cry from a joyless underworld. It is still the work week, I think. I want to be your friend, the magpie cried. Sweet little bird. You are not primarily a symbol of death after all. It folds its wings around itself and puts its head in a popcorn bag. I have a poppy in my curly hair. I carry a purple horn filled with a sporific drink. What can I feel anymore that I have not already felt? How about the ecstatic states of the penguin priests hopping up and down with their arms at their sides, rising up, disappearing into the clouds? Poof, pop, poof, peck, pop, poof. I'm wearing a crocodile on my head to protect me from the damage of falling hailstones. I save its dung to make a salve, so all the evil in the world will have a nice place to stay. December is not eternal, but sometimes it takes a very long time. The late sun shines through a skeleton line, dancing around with trumpets and drums and castanets, trombones, fiddles, and majorettes, light, shadow, and bone. We dance like the circle, and like the circle, the square is also a very famous shape for dancing. We'll dance when we dance, the lower part of our bodies immovable at first, arms flapping above us, blown up by a mighty turbine. Legs break, the sound of an ox cracking its horns. And we will do this all, we'll dance together, something like that. A line of tales. I am Bunny. Among my bunny, I am Bunny, princess of pancakes. Raft up a brilliance of fiery poets, so Bunny said, that the tangles of the mind, a bridge of fire ants, that lonely piano made me cry, was transformed into a swarming. There's a river in here somewhere, and I never even hinted about it until this very moment. Are you? Are you still throwing rocks at the stars one at a time? You have to try a whole handful. My white bathrobe. My white bathrobe. Peed on it. What might be on the other side of the moon? Roaring wheels, gray lard. Thought life might last. Then came the sea. Scheme of motions. Before the scheme of motions could belong to each, there was only a single living substance which, all things now separate into all together opposites, a duck egg appears between the folds. Bubble wrap membranes could no longer bear or hold the much larger creature growing inside them. Summer light to trees, winged both in turn, turn inward. A tucked beak, the unharvested, blooming inside of you, the three great departments of the world. Enjoying the conventional pattern of the human heart. Keep your ticket in your hand, but do not look at it. The ticket was flying with the point of its heart directed forward, foam gathering blood. Determined reliable to me, not more than two had such a bite studying the weather, we must add another. It resembled the sharply incurved aperture given the instrument inside them. On the upper levels of that air sea. Now look at your ticket. It certainly has a handsome number. And under them, the nobody stars. Leave yourself for the crowd. They hid behind the twinkle. After hearing my cry for help, bending my right elbow, bringing down my foot from the shelf and boot it. My foot wants the pear farmer. My foot wants to scar the farmer's heart with a seed that cannot make another tree, make anything at all. Yonder bar of cloud. A ray of light through it paints my dead senses red. The crow as strawberry leather. I am an eternal simpleton cauliflowers with leafy edges. How can it be? How can it be a secret that we live now without color? A flower deep in the center of the mountain, its wide petals, we know it piece by piece, the sound of it, the hum of it, the whole of it opening. It is our only reminder of the sun. The story of the leaf. Green energy squirrel tails cocked up some nut veins melancholy, loving wooden creek crack and shine. Gradually, ash the world. Your physical body, will reflect this change. Nothing but dark spots and clouds in the pictures. The photographs were a kind of energy, a counterpart. The body of the leaf, the energy body, didn't want to be part of the physical body anymore. Died away. In the distance, a lofty palm, the last sound, marauders, nightly efforts, the rough bamboos, silk pocket fish shoals in every direction, dipping our heads back into the water, again over the water, offering to chase us, galaxies, sparkling lights, our palpitated body. The double is the distinct belief of the individual, a capable spiritual essence the machine will never fully explain to a tree, to a leaf.
Thanks, T.E. I have now a couple more poems from Tongo Eyes and Martin. Again, the book is Heaven Is All Goodbyes. Mayday. Under the house, but treated well by the 1970s. A class struggle, sacred and soon. While we spend a new sea level at the store with morbid people who sell alcohol and alcohol for the man, this boarding is a zoo in love, a killing field smile. When they send applause in front of their troops, we got plenty of pain to stay on this guitar for 100 years. When a neighborhood is in pain, houses stutter at each other in a theater of human and plaster. No one ever goes free, but the walls become more thoughtful and remember our names. Men think they are passing around cigarettes, but really cigarettes are passing around men. Houses stutter at each other about the rich man's world and the poor man's water, about the rich man's world and the poor man's repetition. Ex-workers have hunched shoulders that fit between stares and headaches and inverted purgatory. Of course their children feel at home everywhere. Hands slur as they speak. A man is lamppost high, is his lamppost keeper. The alarms are paved with gold. Futureless is this music and this music's proprietors. Children make better skylines out of winos' tails, and it takes one, lamppost high, his lamppost keeper. Incarcerated children next to the lightning, across the jar from purgatory. Happy just to see something in motion, we welcome the North American drum roll. A moth flies to the right of this definition of North America. A moth flies to the right of 25 floors of brick astronomy. Europe rises to our 25th floor window, carrying headaches and mirrors. We should close the window, but we haven't finished our cigarettes. The alarm is paved with gold. The morbid person declares while grinning and crying, "You're going to get the gun under the counter wet," we warn, as we only grin. Channels to fall asleep to. While shoebox to shoebox travels my childhood, professionals roll garbage cans around a conference room, half the size of a holding tank, half the hope of a holding tank, full of third world retail flattery. Nothing wrong with the blind leading the blind, we think they just said. Porcelain epic, succeeding for the most part, dying for the most part, married for the most part to its death. When a hostage has a hostage, this is U.S. education. Stores detach their heads and expect you to do the same when you enter. God says, "Do not trust me in this room." Two fascists walk into a bar. One says, "Let's make a baby." The other says, "Let's make three and let the first one eat the other two." Your sky, not mine, read from the book of poolroom enemies. I'm the best kind of square, poor and in love with the 1960s. The first picture I ever saw in my life faded from my storytelling a long time ago. Not even 10 years old, and most of you are on my shoulders. The store's detached head smiled. Casually be poor. Teach yourself how to get out of this room, and we'll leave you enough blood to turn off the lights on your way out. Casually be poor. They are all cops when you are poor. Tongo Eyes and Martin. And next up, our third more or less live guest, well, I'm the live guest, pre-recorded guest, is Portland legend Leanne Grable. Leanne Grable is a writer, illustrator, performer, and retired special education teacher. Grable teaches graphic flash memoir throughout the Pacific Northwest, outside the pandemic. In love with mixing genres, she has written and produced numerous spoken word multimedia shows, including The Lighter Side of Chronic Depression and Anger, the musical. Her poetry books include Lonesome and Very Quarrelsome Heroes, Short Poems by a Short Person, Bad Girls, a collection of flash nonfiction and a theater piece, and Gold Shoes, a collection of graphic prose poems. She is currently illustrating a novel for filmmaker-writer Penny Allen. She and her husband, Steve Sander, are the founders of Cafe Lena, a Portland poetry hub of the 90s. Grable is the 2020 recipient of the Bread and Roses Award for longtime contributions to women's literature in the Pacific Northwest. And now, recorded on her porch, Leanne Grable.
Hello from Northeast Davis Street. I'm sitting here with Dan Raphael. It's January 15th, 2021. I'm going to read from a relatively new collection of graphic flash memoir called My Husband's Eyebrows. I've been trying to think of a term for this genre, graphic flash, so I'm thinking grash maybe or something. But anyway, it is fully illustrated in color and black and white, and many of these individual poems have been published. And I just want to thank a few of the places: Coal Hill Review, Your Impossible Voice, Cirque, Bending Genres, The Opiate, Burning Word Journal, Florida Review, Subjective, and Hole in the Head Review. I shall begin. On a scale of 1 to 10, oh, and it was edited by Barbara Lamorticella. I had it in a completely different order, and she had some interesting things to do. On a scale of 1 to 10, part 1. We talked about joy. It was my 8th session with Dr. Masaka. I'd been referred to Dr. Masaka because I'd said rape out loud to Kaiser. Dr. Masaka was a small woman with beautiful shoes the color of cognac. I had 10 sessions to learn effective antidotes for worry, fear, anxiety, and sadness, the usuals. I'd worked on them unsuccessfully many times before, in fact, most of before. I told Dr. Masaka I was closer to joy than I'd ever been before in my life. Was it true? I don't know, maybe. I told her I felt like I was changing my posture, like I was lifting my head, arching my back, waking each morning with loft. I told her I woke up thinking of shining on Felicia. We were meeting for lunch in an hour. I told Dr. Masaka I woke up thinking about gleaming all over Felicia, all over everybody, like sprinkling sugar or crushed nuts. Was it true? I don't know. That's great, said Dr. Masaka. You're an adult now. Your father's no longer in the room. I'm 69. No one's shouting and swiping at the head of the table, well, except the fool in the White House. He's almost gone. There's no tiny mother who matches, no tiny mother wearing stacks of clacking bracelets with nervous ice-cold hands, chopping dunes of onions, enough onions to please him, enough onions to start the whole world crying. Sobbing and shitting. When Bailey died, best dog ever, cutest dog ever, my husband sobbed in my arms. He rocked and shook, full body. I had never seen this before. I had never seen him sob before. In 36 years, I'd only seen tears run down his face a handful of times, usually after a documentary about a self-destructive genius like Jean-Michel Basquiat or Miles Davis. But when Bailey died, my husband shook and shivered. He made head-cocking, gut-wrenching animal sounds. I mean, I shook and shivered too, but only 4 times, and always after he left for work. Oh, I know this poem is not about me, and I know my husband keeps secrets. I'm glad. I don't really want to know what he does when I'm not around, or what's at the back of his socks drawer. And I don't want to see him shit. Not really. I've caught a hooded glance or two by mistake. That's enough. I don't want to touch his toenail clippings or wipe his ass. Being intimate with my husband's chaff is not a requirement for a good marriage, is it? Confession in 12 parts. Number one, I told him I scratch inside my ears with the head of a straight pin. A Q-tip is just too soft and round. I need something sharp to soothe that tiny, loud itch. He said nothing. Number two, I told him sometimes I pick dead skin off the bottom of my feet. I pick it, peel it. Sometimes I chew it like a cud. No, I don't eat it. But sometimes there are small dunes of heel skin at my bedside, like dried cocoons. I often wear socks when I go to the doctor, so no one will see my raggedy feet. Number three, when I was 8, I put a dead spider in my grandmother's bowl of strawberries. It was in my bowl of strawberries. Its black legs were splayed against the berry's red skin like sloppy stitches. I don't know why I didn't just put the dead spider in my napkin and throw it in the garbage, but I didn't. Number four, when I was 10, I put a teaspoon of Drano in my best friend's bowl of cereal. I was trying to clean ballpoint pen off my white patent leather purse. It didn't work. I was convinced I'd gotten Drano in my mouth. It was poisonous. I didn't want to die alone. Number five, I covet everything but cats. Number six, I hate more now than I have ever hated. Number seven, I am begging to be absolved. Number eight, because I need to be righteous. Number nine, because I've carried these sins like dead children in my womb. Number 10, because there is an evil afoot. Number 11, and I want to fight it. Number 12, I need to be absolved. I need to win. Crocodile bite. He asked me how my CBD oil supply was doing. I have been rubbing it into my hands. My hands, they look like ginger root and ache at the knobs, I mean joints. But his question annoyed me. What is he, my grandmother? My nurse? Sometimes my husband's avuncularity feels like eczema, like long sleeve silk in summer, like lint stuck to my face, like a clutter of small spiders crawling down my back. I don't like to be nursed. Don't nurse me, I said with exasperation. What is he, my mom? Oh, I know I'll regret this poem. I always regret my bites. But as a wife, I'm a goddamn crocodile. Can't stop snapping. Luckily for you, I've lost teeth, and the ones I have are chewed down and thinning. Maybe the future will be kinder. But, and it starts with a Charles Bukowski quote, you settle upon the knobs on the dresser drawer. You decide that the secret is there. I feel an epiphany coming on, as if it's right around the corner, as if I'm about to turn my head and see a paperclip or a couch cushion or a fried egg, and I'll know something, as if a light is going to fall upon a dense and crotchety shadow, and I'm going to feel a short warmth in my shoulders, behind my ears, a slight shuffling in my brain, as if a chair moved in my medulla oblongata. It might happen any minute. I'll find a billfold full of hundreds and antidotes, and I'll take it. I'm going to take it, wouldn't you? And I'll tell him, wouldn't you? At first I didn't think I would tell him, I mean, but I would. And he'll say, what? Absent-mindedly. And I'll get irritated that he isn't more enthusiastic. This is called Meow. When I first met my husband, he was wearing a Guatemalan sweater with brown buttons like mini muffins and a Scottish cap. He also had a girlfriend on his arm like a purse. I noticed instantly. She was the opposite of me. She was naturally blonde, naturally thin, pinched, loud, a big fan of high heels and powder blue. She looked wealthy. I was just back in town after 4 months in California trying to mend my broken heart. I was wearing all tight, tight jeans, tight tank top, tight spine, tight heart. He started following me all over the house, room to room, telling me things, telling me things, telling me things. Later he said, love at first sight, but I'm patient and I want a kind break from Rana. Primarily impulsive, I didn't really understand or practice patience. 2 months went by. We finally made love on a beautiful overstuffed couch in the middle of my rental room. The couch was periwinkle blue chintz with splashes of white irises and violet primroses. The room had a balcony rimmed by old hawthorns like sage uncles. The love was honey. No, it was the taste of honey. No, it was like bathing in warm honey. No, it was like the look of honey, golden sweet. I made deeply layered mammalian sounds with utter panache. I remember how my teeth shimmied, my paws buzzed, I mean my feet. It was at least a year, but then the judges arrived. They took their permanent seats in my occipital court. They began to ruin everything with their snotty little number cards. 36 years have now gone by. We sit on our couch like couches. We could probably feed the hungry with all the crumbs buried in between the cushions. Somebody should vacuum. Compare an orange. I repeat, most nights we sit on the couch like couches. Yes, I do feel some shame for the staidness. Around 8, I get an orange from the fruit bowl. I peel it, and I plop the two largest sections in my mouth. Juices squirt from my mouth like wet whiskers. Oh, oranges, the fruit of my youth. We always had oranges, boxes of oranges. Maybe I should ask him if he wants some, I think. And then I ask him, do you want some? And before he answers, I give him 3 sections. See, I used to be stingy, so stingy, but I'm heading for generous. Progress is slow, but I'm learning, and I'm learning it from him. Good and bald. He almost always says yes. He drove carpools, he went to soccer games in the rain, basketball games in muggy gyms filled with nervous parents, all talking loudly. He coached, he went to Chuck E. Cheese birthday parties, he chaperoned long weeks at outdoor school, class trips to the planetariums, aquariums, and caves. He went school supply shopping the night before the first day of school, when the chaos was like swimming against the tide in a blender. Now he does the grocery shopping, he takes care of the cast iron pans, he empties the dishwasher, carries the heavy stuff, scrambles the eggs, makes an excellent Italian vinaigrette, and he talks to people who come to the door. That he almost always says yes is one of the main reasons I married him. I was hoping to learn generosity. In my family, generosity was peripheral, like opera or cilantro. We were pitted against each other, commandeered and refereed by Dad. We grew stingy, but I think I already told you that. See, my husband truly does not have a stingy cell in his body. Well, except in his hair follicles on the top of his head. Those guys would rather die than share space with anything. My asparagus tips. My husband started adding asparagus tips to our egg scrambles after 30 years of weekly egg scrambles without them. That's like 1,500 egg scrambles and 0 asparagus tips until now. I'd been hoping he would change in several ways over the years, of course. I had no idea the change was going to come, nor that it would be culinary. Now there are families of headless asparagus in the fridge at all times, green skinny torsos and brown paper pencil skirts. Last week we discovered the neck, when sautéed with garlic and ghee. It's as good as the head, maybe better, more texture and grit, less gouche. May that be said of my husband. One more. How about something more positive to end with? Ghost of Our Love. This was actually in the book that you published of mine, Flirtation. Ghost of Our Love. I thought I'd never see it again. I mean him, in the gild and the glow of my love. Decades of muck, the mundane, discolored socks and annoyance. And then Tuesday, a bat that was caught in the rafters fell down with a flapping and a flurry, and I felt a thigh on his thigh, on his thigh.
And thank you, Leanne. We're all looking forward to a time where we can hear live poetry live I mean, the web's fine, and the radio, of course, is great, especially KABU. Here's a poem I wrote a couple weeks ago at the start of the big freeze. Wrote it before we lost power for 5.5 days. Locked in. No one ever gets free, but the walls become more thoughtful and remember our names. Tonga, Wise, and Martin. Why this spasmodic chill, an urge to tears, a corrosive ellipse dissolving inside me? Lack of natural light with the windows curtained for insulation, isolation, closed off from the random, from the motions change requires. I'm at my borders, not knowing where, when, or how to jump. My fingers ready to go their separate ways for self-protection, scatter the message dissolving from all sides. A wrist gives way. A rib proves hollow. One hand shaking, my stomach's Tuvan song. My wool shirt and shoulder skin negotiating, changing places. Other territories may be involved. Itching wants a voice. Stillness can't get back in. So many walls, but so few load-bearing. Every room has 3 or 4 doorways, but just 3 or 4 rooms. One house inside another, not apartments, but intrinsic. Follow the knots till I'm inside the rope. How many strands are me? If DNA can say everything with 4 words, how can I articulate at a molecular level of time and space, doors too small to open, doors never still enough to try? These times, places get abandoned. Some accidental fires, a few extra deaths. For most, it's a cocoon we come out of too quickly, slow to recover, slightly damaged, if changed at all. Like the ice, I'd rather lift than fall. Like the plants held down by ice, I'd rather be naked and breathing. This poem's from my book, Moving with Every, published last June by Flowstone Press down in Southwest Oregon. It's a great book. Hope you buy it. Hope you buy everybody's book. You know, that's what we all need. More books, more poetry. Seasonal, or Possible Winters is the title. 1. The highway never stops. Asphalt's thermal stress and release. Dry trees nullifying the wind's stealth. Doesn't make sense to see a cat moving and hear nothing. Most people move like pages in a flip book, descending simultaneous mirrored staircases, our LED suits flickering like crushed foil moss. My forehead shivers while my feet are mute or asleep, taking a walk with me, my thin lungs, overzealous thighs, thinking they belong underground, swimming through the thickest possible, below the man-made clouds of culverts, cables, an unedited past without the noise of roots, where pressure's a lubricant. Not sure if light is an anesthetic or a stimulant, making cold more tolerable, as if I could taste what I hadn't seen, mystery dumplings dissolving in my mouth, releasing what might still be able to move, might start a small fire of vegetable aroma, produces a thin grit, the opposite of salt, taking water hostage, compressing smoke into diagnosis. Every billboard here is a menu. How the same ingredients make 85% of our world. How each of our teeth could be a city block with several businesses trading through nerves and saliva. No customers, no doors, no coffee breaks. You could be blinded every time the mouth opens. A sky some turn away from, some refuse to believe. Others keep their cameras rolling just in case, braving the flooding, the chewable rain, the fingers and devices that never apologize. Crows on the frozen grass extend their wings like Edwardian capes, engulfing several other layers, not peeling away like a sarong or a blanket wrapped around someone, just pulled from a January river, the car that slid off the road still bubbling for help. All right, thanks to everybody for listening. Tell your friends to listen. You know, it's available on the web. I'll be back the third Monday in May. Talking Earth happens the first and third Monday of every month. My thanks to the founders of Talking Earth, Walt Curtis and Barbara Lamorticella. This is probably the second longest running radio poetry show in the country, other than Jack Foley down on KPFA in San Francisco. Thanks to Patrick Bocard for all his engineering and technical services. I'm Dan Raphael, and thanks to KABU and all the supporters. Please listen to KABU. KABU needs your support. These are hard times for a lot of organizations, and buy more poetry. March came in like a lamb, and I hope it doesn't go out like a lion, that you're all safe and didn't suffer too much during the storm. I'm Dan Raphael. Good night.
Dr. Caldicott talking on 90.7 FM KBOO. You all realise how terribly important this radio station is now that the federal government is trying to cut funds for national public radio, and you all realise that the real truth only comes out of public radio and that all the rest of the media is compromised and represents the corporations who are destroying the earth. So you absolutely have to support KBOO with lots of money now. It's imperative, and you all know that.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
You can follow KABU on all your social media platforms. Just look for KABU on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Get access to our new content and news, as well as special offers and contests. Like and share your favorite community radio station, KABU.